This is Alan Karpik with Tom Dienhart in our Saturday simulcast, brought to you by the good folks at the Purdue Union Club Hotel, and open for business and been pretty busy, as I understand it, during the pandemic. A lot of folks, when they're coming to campus in this time of pandemic, have been staying there and checking out the new rooms, brand new 811, also 811 restaurant. Beautiful bar in the back, a great spot. And I know, Tom, you had a chance to go in there a couple weeks ago, and really nice spot. And it's going to be great when we get back to playing football games on weekends as well.
Alan, you and I got to go get a scone and a cup of coffee there, buddy.
Yeah, there you go. It's a good spot, and we appreciate their support. And, of course, today's Saturday simulcast, now that we know that we're going to, or as much as we possibly can know, I should say, that we're expected to have football October 23rd or 24th, the season openers. And we're going to look back at some of our most memorable season openers, wins and losses, probably more wins than losses, but have been some memorable ones on that one. And we're going to kind of bounce back and forth, talk about some of the ones that we remember more than any going back over the last 50 years, back to 1970. Tom, I'll give you the first shot. There are a lot out there. You wrote about one last week on the site as well. But tell me about not necessarily your favorite, but maybe the first ones that come to mind.
Yeah, my first two Time Warps, actually, Alan, obviously were season openers because we're doing it chronologically. But I'm going to go back to a game we've talked about a lot, as you know, near to my heart, near to your heart, 1984, the Hoosier Dome.
Yeah.
the dedication game, Purdue versus Mighty Notre Dame, Alan. As you know, the little old Boilermakers were given little chance to win that day, coming off probably, I think, about a 3-8 season in 1983. Yeah. This was Leon Bertinat's, third season there. 1982, his first didn't go very well either. So, again, there was no real reason to expect much of anything in 1984 as it dawned, Alan. But lo and behold, a quarterback named Jim Everett, who had to fight off Jeff Huber and Doug Downing to win the quarterback job in camp, leads the Boilermakers to victory that day. And incredible. And, you know, I talked to Everett before and read stuff where, hey, you know, if he didn't play well that day, he's probably going to get pulled. I think Leon told him as well. He was going to go with the young guys if Jim wasn't going to get it done. Well, Jim got it done against ND in one of the greatest victories in Purdue history. And, of course, that, Alan, as you know, set the table in 1984 for one of the most fun seasons, in, at least in my lifetime, for Purdue football, the Ohio State game, the Michigan game, the trip to a bowl to play Virginia. Just a blast. And, Alan, it all began that day in Circle City in the very first football game ever played in the Hoosier Dome, which is now demolished.
Yeah, really crazy. 23-21 win, you know, some great to Tim Brown, who ended up winning the Heisman Trophy 4 years ago. First time he touches the ball for Notre Dame on the opening kickoff, fumbles it. And Purdue scores. I think it maybe just got a field goal. I can remember Don.
31-yard field goal by Mike Rendina after that.
Yeah, and then Steve Berline literally throwing the ball to Don Baldwin, Purdue's defensive end, and then that resulted in some points. Purdue was behind early, actually, I think 14-3, but came back. Jim Everett to Jeff Price and a key touchdown pass. And yes, a shock, because that was the game, is that we've talked about, that Notre Dame's, it was a home game for Notre Dame in essence. They bust their entire student body down US 31. the Irish were shocked in that game, and that was the dedication, really a huge game for the history of the city of Indianapolis, just to open up that Hoosier Dome. Obviously the Colts starting its first season that year. So yeah, that I think is goes up there about as any. And I'm going to go another game in around that time that had probably as much hype as any game I can remember, 1981 Purdue Stanford. And again, we've talked about that before in terms of games that it was only two or three televised games each Saturday, and that was the game where the blimp came to campus. And I was on in school at the time, maybe 3 or 4 days before, kind of hung around ABC national television. Keith Jackson, I believe, on the call. Purdue was the, as they said, they had clean air in terms of television terms, because it was Purdue, Stanford, John Elway, that quarterback for Stanford, Jimmy Smith on the, not on the opening kickoff, I believe it was the return of Penn. Stanford scores in its first series, misses the extra point. Jimmy Smith, now maybe it was the other round. I think Stanford hit its extra point. Jimmy Smith returns the kick for a touchdown. Purdue wins 27-19, and a memorable, memorable day, certainly when you look back at the history of Purdue football.
Yeah, that was a team, Allen, that began the season 5-2.
Right.
1981, lost its last four games to finish 5-6. Of course, as you know, many listeners know, that was Jim Young's swan song season. But we began with a lot of promise, didn't it? And you talked about that win over number 19 Stanford, and iconic quarterback, football legend, John Elway. It always excites me, Alan, to think of the legends whose shadows have darkened the Ross-Ade Stadium field. Yeah. Like, Elway and Ricky Bell and all the players over the years. It's pretty cool to think about the guys who have played football in that field whenever I'm around there, I guess. It's kind of corny for me, but something I always get a kick out of. For me, Alan, number two, I was lucky enough to be at this game. Maybe you were.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Some great ones that have been there.
Well, this one, this is 1995 at Morgantown, West Virginia. What a blast. I went there with my wife. We took a little vacation. Of course, you know, I planned the vacation on going to see the Boilers at Allen, and never expecting to see a win. And Purdue pulled it out 26-24, Allen. They had a 19-0 halftime lead against the Mountaineers. Had to hang on for dear life. And, of course, you'll remember West Virginia had a chance to win it with 26 seconds to go. They missed a 26-yard field goal. So it was right there. I can still see the picture in the paper, Chike O'Keefer on the ground with his hands in the air, and the angst in the West Virginia players. They had 541 yards of offense. Allen, Purdue only had 368. Mike Allstott had 100 yards rushing, but again, Purdue got out of there by the skin of their teeth. A fun victory, but of course that led to nothing. That was another disappointing year for Jim Coletto, but again, that was a blast being in Morgantown on a beautiful day. As you went to school there, Allen. So you know how beautiful it is down there. So that was a great venue, and great to see Purdue win that day.
Yes, and I was at that game. I was still working in Columbus and had a chance to work with the stat crew that day, as I recall. And yes, Purdue jumps off to a 19-0 lead on the Mountaineers, and West Virginia, a heavy favorite in that game. And Purdue had to hang on for dear life in the second half, and really got lucky because of that 26-yard miss field goal at the buzzer or at the closing minute was shocking to because 26-24 win, because had he made the field goal, of course Purdue would have been behind and lost that game. But I think that's a good one as well. Another one that you've written about, and I'll let you talk about it, is 92 Cal. Oh, but man. I'm going to go with 1978 Michigan State, and what an important win for Jim Young and company. Very, very hot day, almost, I think, 87 degrees at kickoff. I can remember being in the stands, and so much anticipation for that season, just because 77, Purdue had shown some signs of being pretty good with a freshman quarterback named Mark Herman. Herman comes back to the start of his sophomore year, does not play well in that game. Purdue gets behind 14-0. Kirk Gibson, I think it's both touchdown receptions in the first half, and gets hurt, I believe. But Eddie Smith, the quarterback from Michigan State. But it all came down to a 4th-and-1 play to about the 33-yard line. And Michigan State had a bunch line. Herman hands off to John Macon. And John Macon takes off and runs 33 yards for the game-winning touchdown. A game that turned Purdue's program around, certainly, as the Boilermakers finished 9-2-1, and really in 78, really within an eyelash of going to the Rose Bowl with the junk defense. Again, a huge win for Jim Young over, I believe, Daryl Rogers was the head coach at Michigan State at that time. So you're up. What other What are the losses?
Yeah, you know, back in those days, it's interesting how they open the season against Big Ten opponents about every year there, looking at the schedules, and then everybody kind of got away from that. Now it's become the cool thing to do again, to spread your inventory out and open up with conference games. But, yeah, opening up in the Big Ten game was the norm back throughout at least that part of the 70s, Alan. Yeah, you talked about the game I like too, the 1992 Cal game. The Cal Bears come to West Lafayette. The story goes, Alan, as you know, supposedly the Bears got off their team bus on Friday for a walkthrough at Ross-Ade Stadium, wearing cowboy hats, chewing on straw, acting like they were out in Mayberry, going to Hooterville, Petticoat Junction, playing these farmers in West Lafayette. Didn't even know where they were, these sophisticated guys from Berkeley, California, reading all their poetry, right? Well, word got around to the Purdue players about that supposed slight, and that was supposedly a lot of the momentum and provided a lot of juice for Purdue in what turned out, Alan, to be one of the most improbable butt kickings in, I think, Purdue history. I mean, maybe that's an overstatement. I think it was. This was a ranked Cal team.
17th ranked, yep.
It didn't turn out to be a good Cal team. They didn't even go to a bowl, but a ranked Cal team with a lot of NFL players on it. Alan, Purdue races to a 38-3 halftime lead. Anything Jim Coletto did that first half seemingly worked. They were going to just set up a quick run execute a quick run, Alan, toward the end of the first half just to set up a field goal, give the ball to Arlie Connors. He's got second thoughts on Allen and other ideas. He races to the end zone for another touchdown. So it was a nonstop fraternity party in Ross-Ade Stadium that first half. Second half, again, it was a non-factor. This game was over at intermission, truly over at intermission. And the story goes, Allen, that old yarn about Cal coming out mocking Purdue may have just been made up by Jim Coletto.
Yeah, that's interesting that you uncovered that, and whether that's true, we should ask Jim that, whether he did. Unbelievable that, yeah, that I remember Connor's run, and in fact, that Cal just wouldn't tackle him, couldn't tackle him, and it was just crazy. I think Purdue scored two touchdowns in the last minute of that half, and maybe even three in the last 4 or 5 minutes to blow that game wide open, and there was talk of bowl games and all that in 92, then Purdue comes back the next week and loses to Toledo. So that was, I remember that as well. All right, we're going to pick one more favorite, and then we'll go to some of the ones that were tough losses. I'm going to remember memorable ones that I think that belong. 2004 Syracuse, and again, you've written about that in your Time Warp last week. And that, again, clean air. Purdue played on a Sunday of Labor Day weekend, the only time, or the I think it's actually technically the second time in history that Purdue had played on a Sunday in Ross-Ade Stadium. I'm not sure if that's correct. But the point is that Purdue beats Syracuse 51-0, and not a very good performance in the first half, as I recall. Kyle Orton kind of rusty. He got going in the second half with this long touchdown pass to Brian Hare. And Taylor Stubblefield had a long touchdown reception in the second half, the cover of Golden Black, as I recall. But this was a blowout win and the start of really one of the best starts in the history of Purdue football at 5-0 start, Purdue pulling up to a number 5 ranking. And that was impressive, as Purdue was the only show in town that Sunday of Labor Day weekend in a win over the Orange 51. They were the Orange men at the time, I think, but the Orange 51-0.
Yeah, boy, I was at that game, and that was a lot of fun. I remember Dustin Keller scoring a touchdown late, and just to see Purdue rollick over a name brand university like that, just a lot of fun. The real halcyon days for Purdue, as we know, a special 2004 started out on reaching number 5 in the polls at one point. For me, I guess. A game Purdue didn't win, but was memorable for a lot of reasons, Alan. You were there in the heat, the brutal heat of Southern California.
Yeah.
1998, Purdue was actually in the Pigskin Classic. Back in those days, they had the grand, kickoff games, the one in New Jersey, of course, the Pigskin Classic, real marquee events. You had to be a pretty big brand to get on that stage. And to to see Purdue get on that stage against a college football blue blood like USC in an iconic venue like the Coliseum was really cool for me to watch and to realize, hey, you know what? Tiller's got this thing going. This was only his second year. But most significantly, Alan, yes, Purdue lost. But we all know that was the debut start for Drew Brees, the sophomore quarterback in 1998. He was solid that day, Alan. Purdue, I think, had a halftime lead. USC came back largely because they inserted a freshman phenom quarterback named Carson Palmer, who engineered a couple of late touchdown drives. Of course, Palmer went on to win the Heisman, be the first pick in the NFL draft. Great NFL career. We all know about Drew Brees. So we had Carson Palmer versus Drew Brees, Alan, in a very memorable season opener. In 1998, yeah, it started with the loss, but we know it finished in grand fashion with that spectacular Alamo Bowl win against Kansas State.
Yeah, the hottest game I can ever remember being, 100 degrees at least, I think, in the press box. I think it was officially listed at 99 degrees. And it's one of those days in L.A. heat, that type of year, it and I do remember Drew Brees' debut, his first drive taking Purdue right down the field and looking great doing so. And that was when I think one of the other ones in a game somewhat similar, and then we'll kind of go to our honorable mentions after this, both in losses and any other openers that we can remember. But I think way back in 1971, and this is old, I understand, again, only one nationally televised game. Purdue goes out to Husky Stadium in Washington. ABC, the Boilermakers under Bob DeMoss had a disappointing year the year before, but had a lot of talent. And in 71, they had Otis Armstrong, Darrell Stingley, both had long touchdowns in that game. Also, Gary Danielson at quarterback played very well. The Boilermakers lose a heartbreaker 38-35 to Washington. Ended up having that season. They lost, I think, the last five games of the year and finished 3-7. A team that actually was really probably the best 3-7 team in the history of Purdue football, really, if you look at it in terms of talent. But I remember that game again because it was the only show in time, and it was a town, and it was a back and forth. I think the lead changed in the second half four or five times. A disappointing loss for Purdue, but a showcase game of a couple of greats, and Otis Armstrong and Darrell Stingley and Gary Danielson, to be honest, was a great game. Sonny Sixkiller, the quarterback for Washington, 49 years ago. I know I'm old enough to remember that, but that was a memorable one. All right, give me two or three of your honorable mentions and we'll wrap this up, but some other games, losses or memorable season openers that you can remember.
Yeah, 1985 at Pitt, Allen. Coming off the 84 season, the Peach Bowl, there was a lot of excitement and expectations for Purdue. Jim Everett was a Heisman Trophy contender, I should say. They wanted to make his name more relevant by playing this game on ESPN national television. If you recall, Alan, they moved this game up to accommodate TV. They played August 31st, 1985. Purdue's next game wasn't until September 21st after that. But this was a chance to get on national TV for Jim Everett, for Purdue, you know, Chuck Long at Iowa, Jack Trudeau at Illinois. Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, they wanted to get Everett more publicity coming off a great year. And as we all know, 31-30 loss for Purdue. They were oh so close there, Alan. The two-point conversion pass, they went for the win late. Jim Everett to Jack Berry came up short. Purdue loses 31-30, and that really set a bad tone for an 85 season that finished 5-6. A lot of unmet expectations, Alan. That probably was Leon Burtonette's undoing, though he did coach one more year.
Yeah, I think we can point to that game as much as any from that standpoint. I think some other memorable games, even though this is obscure, but I can remember the 86 Ball State game and the debut of Jeff George, if you can imagine, and Rod Woodson. Purdue won that game easily. 79 Wisconsin, also so much hype in that game after the 78 season. Purdue had tied Wisconsin 24-24, and it was really like a loss because it cost Purdue dearly in the Big Ten race the year before they come in and blow out Wisconsin. Pete Quinn has a touchdown in that game, as I recall, but also just the notion that Purdue destroyed Purdue, I think, was sixth ranked. There was more hype, probably as much hype as any game in open season opening game in terms of expectations, certainly in the last 50 years in that one. All right. Any other also Rans? We've got memorable from your standpoint.
Just real quick, the 2017 game against Louisville and in Lucas Oil Stadium, Jeff Brohm's debut against his alma mater of all games, of all teams to debut against. How ironic is that, Alan? Lamar Jackson, the electric quarterback for the Cardinals, Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. Purdue doesn't win, but boy, it sure felt like a victory in a lot of ways. Purdue battled to the end, was in the game against an elite Louisville team, and really gave fans a sense of hope that, hey, they made a great hire, and Jeff Brohm in the future looked very bright.
Yeah, that one was memorable because at the start of that game, the defensive stops early on. Purdue, I think, stopped Louisville at the goal line, had a chance, he got ahead early. I know Jackson Anthrop had a touchdown as a true freshman or as a redshirt freshman. Yes, that was it was memorable, and I think really set the tone for a good season, set the tone for the program, because Purdue was at least a 3-touchdown underdog in that game, and lose it by 7, I believe it was, but certainly a really good performance. There have been some others. You know, the 1980 Notre Dame game did not go as well, so much hype, and that was Mark Herman's injury leading into that game, and Purdue and Notre Dame both ranked in the top 12, I believe, heading into that one. Wasn't as good an outcome, but season openers can set the tone for the year, and you know, in 2020, assuming it's Nebraska, and we may know by the time you listen to this, you may know who Purdue's season opener is, but those games have had an ability to set the tone for Purdue over the years. And we'll look forward to not only the 2020 season opener, but talking more about that. We're going to have some other Saturday simulcast on tap as well. We'll look forward to doing that. Tom, parting shot, anything else you want to add?
No, like I said, a lot of fun, Alan. Like you said, the season openers, boy, you never want to overstate, put too much importance on any one game in football, but you only got 12 shots a year, Alan. It's not a 162-game season. And the tone that you said that the season opener can set is very important. So, yeah, fun memories, and there have been a lot of nice performances by Purdue over the years in the late August, early September heat.
All right, you're absolutely right. So I want to thank our sponsor, and that's the Purdue Union Club Hotel and our Saturday simulcast. We'll look forward to getting to games where we won't be doing the Saturday simulcast, because we'll be doing football games. We've enjoyed these very much. We still have a few more in the hopper for the next few weeks before the Boilermakers open up the week of October 23rd and 24th. So thank our sponsor, the Purdue Union Club Hotel. Tom, thank you. For the rest of you, have a great rest of the weekend, and thanks for listening and watching our Saturday simulcast. Have a good one.